Welcome, listeners and stellar convicts, to the Galactic Radio Network's Earth History Lesson number 59359, a mandatory exposé of smoke, steel, and sunburnt human madness. Our tale begins in the Old West of the fifth smallest continent. The year is 1881. Here, the frontier is not a place of simple cowboys and open skies. No. The plains are a battlefield where giant corporations wrestle for supremacy, their iron horses tearing across the land like mechanical predators. Steam and greed hiss in equal measure, and every rail spike hammered into the prairie brings one more innocent soul, be it man, horse, or fool, closer to oblivion. So, sit back, tune your dials, and brace yourselves. This is a story of cowboys, con artists, tycoons, and the strange, terrible beauty of a land that refused to be contained. But first, our story begins back east, in New York City, at the headquarters of the Cis-Continental Railroad.
The Cis-Continental Railroad must have that land, in Cabbage, Wyoming. Without it, our tracks stop in the middle of nowhere, like a drunk sprawled across the prairie. With it, we undercut the Transcontinental Railroad and bleed them dry.
Exactly. Every acre we seize, every worker we poach, every rivet we steal is like a drop of pure liquid gold. But it's not about trains, Blackwood. It's about monopoly. Power, pure and simple.
So, we send the idiot.
You have a better option?
Mr. Crane, why choose this Horace fellow, of all people? He's more than your run-of-the-mill idiot. He's one of those artsy-fartsy idiots.
Yes, an idiot, certainly. But an idiot with roots in Cabbage. His uncle still rots out there, and his father was, well, allegedly torn apart by cowboys. A colourful lineage, no matter how you slice it. It means he might survive longer than the last two notaries we dispatched.
Notary? I thought we were sending an enforcer.
Enforcers are a last resort. They drink too much, shoot too much, and expect to be paid in gold teeth. Notaries are far cheaper, and if they die, no one notices.
Cheaper? Yes. Disposable, like paper itself. But what about his literary affliction? I've heard he fancies himself a poet.
Precisely. No sane man listens to him. He walks about, babbling of ravens and grotesque jars of infant puree. The townsfolk will ignore his words, but they will not ignore his documents. Our documents. Our glorious, all-powerful documents.
But...
And remember, the ignoble people of Cabbage respect papers more than bullets.
Still, the Cabbage Tract is cursed ground. Our surveyors went missing. The last notary swallowed by prairie dust. What makes you think Bellwether won't meet the same fate?
Ha! Because he's desperate. The mercantile exchange has him by the throat. A man drowning in baby food debts will sign his soul away just for air. He will get that land easement signed, notarized and bled upon if necessary. And if he fails, well, we've lost nothing but stationery.
Horace Bellwether, salesman by trade, notary by contract, poet by delusion, rides the convict express westward, rattling from Leavenworth, Kansas to the ragged outpost of Cheyenne. Around him, the iron car clatters with shackled men, thieves and killers bound for places where law is thinner than prairie air. Horace does not notice them. His mind is too heavy, weighed down with the melodrama of his own dimension. In his trembling hands, he clutches a letter from his wife, Margaret, back in New York City. A letter inked with hunger and despair. Every line a reminder of the 13 small mouths waiting to be repossessed by the mercantile exchange should he fail. Horace reads it as though it was scripture, and when he finishes, he begins again, savoring every word like a condemned man licking the last spoon of broth.
Dearest Horace, The debt collectors came again this morning. They rapped upon the door with such violence that baby Florence screamed herself hoarse, and little Augustus nearly swallowed his spoon whole. I told them you were away on important business with the railroad, but they sneered and said, "Coal doesn't feed babies." I must tell you plainly, Horace, the cupboards are bare. I stretched the last of the baby food into soups, but the children grow gaunt, and I fear the neighbors have begun to whisper that we are not respectable. One of the exchangemen said, half in jest, that they might start repossessing the children by size, beginning with the middle ones, since they are least essential and most overlooked. Please, I beg you, succeed in this errand. Secure your commission. Sign whatever paper they place before you. Do not indulge your old fancies of writing and poetry. You are a salesman, Horace. You must sell, for our lives depend upon it. The children send their love, even though they are too inebriated to write. Yours in worry, Margaret.
My beloved Margaret, your letters struck my breast like a mouthful of dry porridge. I implore you to please choose your words more poetically in the future, as I see in your words the skeletal hand of despair reaching from the cradle to clutch at our tender brood. Yet, my dear, take heart. Though I will soon walk upon the cracked and blistering earth of the fabled western land known as Wyoming, where the cowboys drag their limp appendages like specters from a fever dream, I am not without hope. This land easement shall be mine, or rather the railroad's, signed in ink as red as the blood of forgotten fathers, and with it shall come our salvation. You caution me against my literary labors, but alas, how can I silence the tortured organ of my soul? Even now, beneath the dim light of a prairie moon, I compose an epic entitled The Moor of Eminent Domain. When read aloud, it causes men to retch bile and women to faint, yet is this not proof of its sublime power? Tell the children not to fear repossession. Though creditors may rattle at the door like skeletons demanding entry, their hunger shall be sated soon. Yours, I fear, may endure far longer. I see visions. Oh, yes. Visions of myself, not as a petty salesman, but as a writer of immortal gloom, embalmed forever in the sepulchre of American letters. Hold fast, Margaret. Feed the mare if you must, but know that soon I shall return, our fortunes restored, and with a manuscript that shall make even Poe himself crawl from the grave in admiration or nausea. Eternally yours in commerce and calamity, Horace.
Horace Bellwether gazed out the window, letting the prairie unroll beneath him like an endless swaying green carpet. His mind, weighed down with letters and debts, wandered into visions of a new life, one tinged with the scent of sagebrush, horse dung, and the relentless inevitability of iron and steam. Behind him, the convicts rattled their chains and muttered curses, their voices a low, menacing accompaniment to the rhythmic clatter of the train wheels. Each clang of metal against metal seemed to punctuate Horace's thoughts, reminding him that freedom, like the prairie, was always just beyond reach. And then, without warning, a figure appeared in the aisle beside him.
A new life awaits you in the Western lands.
Excuse me, you mean...
The Western lands, sir, they stretch vast and unbroken before you.
You mean out the window?
Ah, yes. The window, the world, everywhere. Just as the advertisements boast, a new life awaits us out there, amidst the cowboys and other wild creatures.
Ma'am, I believe the unaccompanied wife's car lies somewhere in the rear. Surely that is where one would find ladies, or at least respectable company.
I am not a wife, sir. I am an anthropologist.
Anthro? What? What is it exactly, and for whom should you be apologising?
Anthropal. Oh, gee. I offer no apology for myself nor for any other...
Great heavens, gaze upon them. How magnificently they ride their beasts.
What are you... Oh, I behold them now. Out on the plains, galloping along with the train. Are those...
Yes, those are cowboys.
I expected them to be... larger. Much larger, if truth be told.
Oi! You limp-legged idiots! You cavemen! Move your arses, you mangy prairie rats!
Oi, look at them! You call that riding? I've seen snakes walk straighter.
Fascinating. The convicts, they must be pro-railroad sympathizers. Only those devoted to iron and steam would despise the magnificence of the cowboy so.
I don't understand. Are the cowboys trying to tell us something? Perhaps there is danger ahead. The track, maybe. Broken or torn. Should we alert the conductor? Good heavens! Something struck the tracks!
Soon, a crimson torrent began to streak the windows from outside. The cowboys, once raucous and spirited, slumped in silence. Their chase ceased. Their eyes, heavy with sorrow, seemed to mourn something lost, or perhaps something inevitable.
My God! They were trying to warn us, weren't they? The cowboys, the danger.
My good man, there is nothing more dangerous than a steam locomotive and the company that drives it. The cowboys, for all their cunning, cannot contend with the jaws of iron and the greed behind it.
And so, amidst the blood, the cheers, and the prairie sun, Horace learned an early truth of the West. Not all warnings come in words. Some come in limping legs, cowboy's eyes, and the merciless bite of a railroad made of iron, steam, and ambition.